The state believes Alaska's tradition of joint state and local school cooperation over public schools is constitutional.
The state appeals a ruling that invalidates a requirement that local school districts help pay for education. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, January 28th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, a project that connects homeless residents to services like haircuts under one roof.
Someone told me I could get a job now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he says now you can get a job after I got the haircut.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the 2015 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Lawmakers in Juneau have scrapped a bill that attempted to address the first phase of full marijuana legalization in Alaska. Anchorage Republican Gabrielle Ledoux co-chairs the Joint Judiciary Committee and at a hearing today said they won't move the Senate or House versions of the bill.
We're not going to do anything more with these bills other than hear the testimony from people today until these bills come back from legislative drafting in a form that we feel reflects the will of the people.
The most controversial part of Senate Bill 30 was the use of what's called affirmative defense as a mechanism for decriminalization. The provision offered a legal defense for anyone brought to court for possessing an ounce or less of marijuana after a change in the legal status next month. Critics testified the decriminalization language was confusing and cumbersome. Most of today's testimony came from Cynthia Franklin, head of the Alcoholic Beverages Control Board, which is tasked with overseeing the regulation of a burgeoning marijuana industry. Franklin told the committee marijuana needs a separate board for oversight.
We really don't have marijuana regulators standing in a closet somewhere waiting to be just brought out and placed on this board. This is a new industry. It is a new substance to regulate in a regulatory manner versus a criminal enforcement manner.
Franklin says Alaska has a good opportunity to learn from lessons on legalization in Colorado and proactively legislate regulations on the new industry. Members of the Judiciary Committee are hoping to pass legislation that gives guidance to law enforcement and the public before February 24th. The Anchorage Assembly voted unanimously last night to ban public consumption of marijuana. KSKA's Zachariah Hughes reports.
Most of those who testified before the assembly accused the body of violating the will of voters by trying to ban the use of marijuana in Anchorage. But that's not what the new ordinance does. Instead, it gives the Anchorage Police Department and lawmakers the first in a series of instructions about how to proceed as marijuana goes from illegal to legal on February 24th. The new rules treat marijuana almost identically to alcohol. No lighting up on the sidewalk, no driving under the influence, no consuming if you're under 21. The measure creates a civil citation for consuming in public, bringing along with it a $100 ticket, but no jail time or criminal record. Mark Mew is chief of the Anchorage Police Department and says that while the bill is imperfect, the municipality would send the wrong signal if it took no action on the matter until the legislature finished a totally comprehensive bill later on.
But by that time, everybody's gone hog wild. You know, they for 6 months it's been olly olly oxen free, and people's view that everything is legal with respect to marijuana has just been reinforced for 6 months, and we'll never be able to contain it back to where it is.
The very big missing piece in Alaska's decriminalization process right now is regulating who can grow, process, and sell marijuana products. Until local and state officials develop rules for dispensing, there's still no technically legal way to obtain recreational marijuana. That also means that even after February 24th, businesses like bars are not allowed to let patrons use pot in their establishments. For now, those count as public. Assemblymember Bill Starr added an amendment bringing the measure back before the body a year from now in order to reassess whether or not the law is working. As municipalities around the state weigh their local options, a joint judiciary committee in Juneau is hammering out a bill of their own. and the process is no less complicated. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
The state of Alaska announced today that it will appeal a final ruling by Superior Court Judge William Carey in favor of the Ketchikan Gateway Borough's long-held argument that the state's required local contribution for public education violates Alaska's constitution. The state also will ask for a stay on Judge Carey's ruling while the appeal is considered by the Alaska Supreme Court. KRBD's Layla Carey reports.
Catherine Vogel is an assistant attorney general with the State Department of Law. She says that Judge Carey's decision was simply wrong.
The state believes Alaska's tradition of joint state and local school cooperation over public schools is constitutional.
In his decision, the judge ruled that municipalities should not be required to pay for public education because the required local contribution is essentially a tax earmarked for a special purpose. Carey says that is a violation of the Constitution. Vogel says the state disagrees with Carey's conclusion because it's not a state tax.
Instead, it is locally raised money that goes directly to local schools. And the dedicated funds prohibition applies to state revenue. And that's the biggest point of contention that the state has.
Vogel adds that the prohibition on dedicated funds has a built-in exception for state-local cooperative programs.
From the state's perspective, public schools is a quintessential state-local cooperative program.
Ketchikan Gateway Borough Manager Dan Bockhorst says he's heard all that before.
The state argued that unsuccessfully in the court. We disagreed, and the Superior Court disagreed with the state's position as well.
Bockhorst says the state's decision to appeal Judge Carey's ruling was not unexpected.
We're certainly not surprised that the state plans to appeal, given the magnitude of the issue, roughly $235 million annually statewide that is imposed on 34 municipal governments, two-thirds of the school districts in Alaska.
But Bockhorst says he's confident that the Supreme Court will uphold the lower court ruling.
It is a charge levied by the state that is dedicated to a particular purpose, and that circumstance is prohibited by Alaska's constitution.
The Ketchikan Gateway Borough filed the lawsuit almost exactly a year ago, but borough officials have been talking about the issue for much longer. It's been litigated before without success, but those lawsuits focused on different arguments. For example, the Mat-Su Borough many years ago sued the state, claiming that the required local contribution was unfair to municipal governments. While the current lawsuit didn't bring those failed arguments back in front of the court, Bockhorst agrees that it is unfair and adds that it's just bad policy.
It imposes literally billions over time, billions of dollars in burdens on 34 municipal governments in Alaska and ignores one-third of Alaska school districts without regard to their fiscal capacity.
State attorneys plan to file their motion for a stay within a few days with Superior Court Judge William Carey. If he denies it, Vogel says they'll file for a stay with the Alaska Supreme Court, which is where they'll also file their appeal. How long that appeal will take is unknown.
There's no fixed timeline for how long it will take the Supreme Court, but this is a case that is going to require robust briefing, so I anticipate it will be a few months to, you know, a year before we get a decision from the Alaska Supreme Court, just if history is a guide.
Bockhorst says the borough is ready to see the case through to the end and has funds set aside for legal costs. Ketchikan's Borough Assembly appropriated $400,000 for the lawsuit and so far has spent only $150,000. That's a pretty good investment if the case ends up in the borough's favor. Ketchikan's required local contribution in 2014 was about $4.2 million. The borough did ask Judge Carey to make the state refund that money, but that part of the lawsuit was denied. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
Senator Lisa Murkowski today failed to land her first counterpunch at the Obama administration's new Arctic conservation policies. The Senate rejected an amendment that would have put a time limit on wilderness study areas. Only Congress can permanently designate land as wilderness, but as Murkowski explained on the Senate floor, once the president recommends wilderness status, the government manages the land as wilderness anyway.
In fact, Many areas have been managed as de facto wilderness for decades because the Congress has not acted.
The amendment she proposed for the Keystone Pipeline bill would have removed that protection if Congress didn't approve a request within a year. The amendment would have started the clock on the 12-million-acre wilderness area President Obama proposes for the Arctic Refuge. It also would have affected a wilderness study area inside the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, and other areas in a dozen western states. 50 senators voted for it, but it needed 60 to pass. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, new research finds a gene mutation among some Alaska natives that leads to sugar intolerance.
The traditional diet in those regions is all fat, all protein. It's like an Atkins diet on steroids.
Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Artist, show us how you inspire Alaska. Apply now for an individual artist award. The deadline is March the 1st. Learn more at rasmussen.org/IAA. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
House Democrats plan to use their increase in numbers as leverage when pushing for Medicaid expansion. With the last election, the House Minority Caucus grew from 10 to 13, making support from at least some of their members necessary for any action that requires a three-fourths vote. The most significant of these actions is a vote to allow the legislature to cover a shortfall through the Constitutional Budget Reserve, a hard-to-tap rainy day account that is worth $11 billion. House Minority Leader Chris Tuck says that requirement could help his caucus push for Medicaid expansion. While the federal government would pay the added costs of Medicaid expansion through 2016, the legislature must accept the money through a line in its budget.
We do know that that's going to be a bargaining strength for our side, and we're going to use that vote very cautiously. We want to make sure that we're doing the best for Alaska, making those lasting opportunities, in, not just in healthcare, but in education.
With a projected deficit of over $3 billion, the legislature's financial analysts have determined that it will be necessary to access the constitutional budget reserves. The withdrawal could be structured in such a way that education funding is tied to a vote, making opposition to use of the reserves more difficult. Donlin Gold is shuttering its camp at the site of its gold deposit near Crooked Creek. Kirk Parkman is external affairs manager for Donlin Gold.
Because a significant amount of field work necessary to bring the project to permitting has already been completed, the need for a camp to be open during that permitting phase doesn't exist. And so we're temporarily closing the camp during the final phases of the permitting process, and we'll make a decision to open it once we get through the permitting and additional fieldwork justifies the need for the camp to be opened up again.
Parkin expects 10 jobs lost in the closure. Over 200 people worked on site at times of peak exploration and fieldwork. The camp has been open for most of the past 20 years, during which companies have explored the massive gold prospect. Donlin says it will be another 2 years before the company can make a decision on whether to move ahead. The idea that traditional diets are best for coastal Alaska Native people is being further confirmed by the discovery of a gene deficiency that doesn't allow their systems to process sugar. Dr. Matthew Hirschfeld is the director of maternal and child health services at the Alaska Native Medical Center. The gene causes a condition known as CSID. Hirschfeld says it's likely 1 to 5% of Alaska Natives have the gene deficiency. He told APRN's Lori Townsend the addition of sugar into so many processed foods is not good for anyone, but is especially bad for coastal Alaska Native people.
The place that we're seeing it most in Alaska right now is coastal regions. So Yupik and Inupiaq populations of Bethel, Nome, Kotzebue, and Barrow.
Was this surprising? It's not as if people haven't been exposed to sugar for, you know, at least two or three generations by now. So was it surprising to see that there's still, that somehow people's systems haven't adapted?
Evolution of these types of genes don't happen that quick. So we've had tens of thousands of years of evolution in those populations to essentially have a carbohydrate-free diet. The traditional diet in those regions is all fat, all protein. It's like an Atkins diet on steroids. And so introducing sugar into the diet two to three generations ago wouldn't give them enough time to be able to adapt to the more westernized diet in those areas.
What happens for people who have this intolerance? What's the risk? What happens to them?
What we usually see is babies actually do very well with this because breast milk and most of the formulas that you start babies on contain lactose and no sucrose. And so for the first 6 months or so of life, babies actually do fine and they have no symptoms. When you start to introduce solid foods into the baby's diet, if those solid foods contain sugar and lots of baby foods do contain sugar, they start having diarrhea. And another thing we don't understand about this particular issue is some kids develop very mild symptoms, so just intermittent diarrhea. Some kids develop such horrible diarrhea that they don't grow. And we don't understand the difference between the two. Some is due to, you know, diet. If you have a lot of sugar in your diet, you're going to have more diarrhea. But there are kids on similar diets who have very different symptoms and levels of diarrhea.
So is it similar then with that range, is it similar to people who have food allergies that some may have a really extreme, you know, a fatal reaction and others might just have mild respiratory problems? Is it sort of looking at something in that respect?
It's very similar to that. Similar to food allergies, we don't understand why some people have really bad ones and some people don't have as bad ones. But in this case, for the most part, kids have kind of mild to moderate symptoms, but there are the kids who just absolutely don't grow until you take them completely off sucrose. And the cure for this is the old traditional diet. Once they go back to a sea mammal-based diet of whale and walrus and seal with very little Western food introduced, the kids do great.
Is there a way to understand the percentage of people who are at risk or how many people may be impacted in Alaska?
Not at the moment, because we haven't actually done a big study on the Alaska Native population. There are other populations that are similar. So the Canadian Inuit population and the Greenland Inuit population both have been a little more studied for this. And it's estimated in Greenland about 5% of the population, of the Inuit population, has this particular issue. And in Canada, it's somewhere around 1% to 2%. So I would expect we'd be somewhere in that range. This is an autosomal recessive disorder, which means you have to have one copy from your mom, one copy from your dad. You have to have two copies of this particular mutated gene. And there's a lot more people who carry one copy than who have the two copies. So it's a very prevalent gene in this population, I would guess.
But you don't have problems unless mom and dad both have that gene.
That's correct.
And are you recommending, are you working to get the word out to people in these regions that maybe they should be tested?
We are working on that, and we're testing patients who are symptomatic. So if you don't have diarrhea and you're on a Western diet, it's very, very unlikely that you have congenital sucrase isomaltase deficiency. But if you have chronic diarrhea and there's sugar in your diet, if you're from one of the regions I mentioned, Bethel, Nome, Kotzebue, Barrow, it's actually fairly likely that your test may come back positive. So I do recommend to providers from those areas that they send this test.
Dr. Matthew Hirschfeld is the Director of Maternal and Child Health Services at ANMC.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly. Over the years, Alaskans like you have donated over $10 million to nonprofit organizations benefiting everything from Alaska's youth to the arts to healthcare. You've even donated to public radio to keep quality programming alive and well in Alaska. So come on, Alaska, warm your heart by sharing your PFD. Pick, click, give. This message on Alaska Public Media comes from ExxonMobil, BP Alaska, and Alaska Mental Health Trust.
About 1,000 Anchorage residents are homeless, and although the city has dozens of agencies to help people, reaching them all is difficult. So Project Homeless Connect, a yearly event, brings service providers together to connect people with help. KSKA's Ann Hillman visited today's event.
50-year-old John peers through wire-rimmed glasses surrounded by a halo of thick, curly, graying hair and a bulky salt-and-pepper beard. He sits down in front of a volunteer hairstylist and puts in his request.
I want this off of my face. Can you do that?
Absolutely.
And
sure.
And I want a high-end tie.
John, who didn't want to give his real name, is getting a free haircut at the Project Homeless Connect event in Anchorage. He says a new, clean look will help him.
So if I get rid of that, maybe the girls will look at me more.
John says it with a straight face, then grins. His real reason?
They'll help me get maybe find a job, and I have a problem with the winter because it's icicles get on my whiskers.
John is currently homeless. He's mostly been living in shelters for about 4 months since his last construction job.
Not very fun. Too many people.
John says he feels crowded in the shelters, but sleeping in the cold isn't comfortable either. Sitting on his lap is a checklist of things to do at the event. After his haircut, he wants to learn about housing options. He says it will get him away from the alcohol on the streets.
Because it's not healthy, and I need to move on. I need to make it better for myself so that I can be reliable, so I can get this job I want.
Project coordinator Trevor Storrs says the event is aimed at connecting people who are experiencing poverty or homelessness to necessary services.
It takes about 50 miles to travel to get all the services that somebody needs, where here it takes 50 steps.
Different organizations are signing people up for public assistance, issuing state IDs, giving applications for housing options, offering health exams, and more. This is the 13th time the event has been held in Anchorage since it started in 2007. Storrs says it's also about raising awareness in the community about everyone who experiences homelessness.
And we encourage all people, when they are looking at those people on the corner, to remember that is not always the face. That's just the visible. There's a huge invisible face out there, which are families and children, as well as the working poor.
Back at the haircutting station, the last of John's locks tumble to the ground.
What do you think? Is it look good?
You look like a different person.
I knew I would. That's why I'm doing it.
Yeah.
They're going to say, when I get back home, they're going to say, intruder, intruder.
He grins into the mirror and says he's already encouraged.
Someone told me I could get a job now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he says, now you can get a job after I got the haircut.
He dusts off his shirt and heads off to learn about housing. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
Homelessness is a problem in Haines, too, where there is no shelter or centralized service tasked with responding to homelessness. So local organizations help out, but even they aren't sure how large the problem is and what the solution should be. KHNS's Emily Files reports.
We had one guy in here when I first got here. He was slept in the back there for 6 months until he could get back out to Chilkat Lake.
Lieutenant Dave Kyle is a Corps officer at the Haines Salvation Army. He points back behind racks of secondhand clothing to a room where 5 or 6 people have slept over the past 3 years. Kyle says he's on sketchy ground letting people stay here when they have nowhere else to go. This isn't a licensed shelter.
Yes, I do tend to push the envelope a little bit in regards to helping my community.
Sierra Jimenez works for Southeast Alaska Independent Living, which serves seniors and people with disabilities. SAIL and the Salvation Army are two Haines organizations that seem to deal with homelessness the most. They often provide one-way ferry tickets to Juneau, to the Glory Hole shelter. That happens
several times a year, and I don't know that it's a solution, but it's the solution we have here in Haines. Then that generally is for somebody who is chronically homeless, truly has no place to go and no resources, and a shelter is the only option.
Roger and Judy Clay were in that situation when they showed up in Haines more than a year ago. Here's Judy.
When my PFD check come in that 1 year, without even telling Roger, I'd already made the decision that we were going to come back to Haines, one way or another. I was getting real frustrated on the stress I was under, and not having a place to live.
The Clays came to Haines from Anchorage. They slept in the Salvation Army building for a night or two, and then they were sent to the Glory Hole in Juneau. It wasn't until they got disability income that Jimenez was able to help them successfully apply for a government-subsidized apartment in Haines. When people like the Clays show up, Jimenez and Kyle say it would be nice to have a shelter for them, but they're not sure if there are enough homeless people in Haines to make a shelter worth it.
You know, it's a really good question, and I don't know the answer to that because it would be so nice to have an emergency bed or two for families that come through while we try to put the pieces together. That would be the dream, the ideal situation.
Kyle says helping people who are at risk of becoming homeless is a bigger concern here than helping those who are already homeless.
Homeless care is very low on my expenses radar. I just helped a family out with $1,300 worth of rent assistance. Another family at $65 for electric, another family at $75 for electric, and I haven't helped anybody with homeless.
But all those people, if they didn't have a Salvation Army to go to for that kind of help, could face homelessness, potentially facing
exactly.
homelessness. Jimenez also says helping people who are maybe a paycheck or two away from homelessness is a more common problem in Haines.
Sometimes somebody just needs help 1 month financially with rent or with food, and then they can kind of be back on their feet. Other times people need education and help, you know, budgeting and understanding how to not run into the problem in the future. There's every different story.
After KHNS's December story on homelessness, Haynesboro manager Dave Sosa contacted the Salvation Army and SAIL to set up a meeting, which hasn't happened yet.
There's plenty of room for discussion on these issues and, you know, take a look at what's the scope of the problem, because I know there are some homeless people, but I don't know how many.
But if he wants definitive numbers, he's not going to get them. There are a few local organizations responding to homelessness, but there is no organization tracking it. If people want to put a number on homelessness in Haines, it will require taking a leap and setting up a centralized service, even though the scale of the problem is uncertain. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
And that's Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Zachariah Hughes and Dan Hillman in Anchorage, Layla Carey in Ketchikan, Ben Matheson in Bethel, Emily Files in Haines, APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau, and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer, Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
And by
Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation providing oilfield services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. Enroll now in the health insurance marketplace. Sign up at healthcare.gov. Open enrollment ends February 15th. Depending on your income, age, and family size, you may be eligible for discounts that may lower your monthly costs and out-of-pocket expenses. Pick a plan that is right for you and your family. Call 211 for free individual assistance about the health insurance marketplace. Visit GetCoveredAlaska.org for more information. This message sponsored by Ashna, a partner of Get Covered Alaska.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to GetCoveredAK.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.